This is Radio Superior 1955, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the evening Gather Round show.
Come on in and gather around, campers. Tim Michaels here lighting the old campfire. It's Saturday, February 12th, 1955. Happy birthday to Honest Abe. The Foxhole Gang is singing with gang leader George G. Newton, a regular Marlon Brando tough guy. He wears chaps and everything. And hold on to your backpacks, campers. We're going to celebrate Lincoln's birthday, including chopping down somebody's cherry tree.
George Washington.
Right. I'll get out my Lincoln logs.
We're going to celebrate it like only the Foxhole Gang can.
Nice pointy party hats.
I made them myself. You see, it's real very simple. Just some crepe paper, tape, and staples.
The staples hurt. You might want to consider some Elmer's glue there, Floyd Boyd.
Ouch! Northern State Bank is picking up the tab for the 6 o'clock news. Northern State Bank with branches in Ashland, Mason, Mellon, Glidden, and Butternut. Your turn at the campfire, Lou.
Good evening, Tim, and good listeners. A major witness in Senator McCarthy's hunt for communists in government apparently lied. Chiang Kai-shek's troops are chased back to Formosa. Communist China threatens war and a major shakeup in the Kremlin. We begin our world report off mainland China.
Hello, this is Max Jordan aboard the USS Estes off the Tawkins Islands. The last Chinese nationalist soldiers boarded ships off the Tawkins Islands beaches at 11:10 tonight to complete the evacuation here. The last stage of the evacuation was spectacular. Nationalist soldiers blew up unboxed ammunition in a great fireworks display. Balls of blue, green, red, and orange shot high into the sky. The nationalists dynamited and put to the torch trenches, pillboxes, and buildings. Before the Tawkin withdrawal, a storm appeared to be brewing over the future of Nanshisan, nationalist island located 30 miles to the south. It lies about 20 miles off the communist China mainland, 120 miles north of Formosa. Nationalists made it clear today they intend to hold it with or without help from the United States. Meanwhile, legendary two-gun Wang Pei Mai has reached Formosa, minus her famous shooting irons, but loaded with 100 orphans from the Tawkin Island. A former guerrilla and pirate leader, famed for resistance first against the Japanese and later against the communists, seems bouncy despite her 48 years. Quote, I have laid down my weapons. I am too old to fight, end quote. The children are orphans of parents killed by communists. Wang Pai Mei was once known as the Queen of the Pirates along the coast of Shanghai. The widow of a pirate, she turned her band of buccaneers and their stealthy armed junks against the Japanese early in World War II and earned a nationalist pardon for her pirate days. After the Reds gained control of the mainland in 1949, she turned the Popeye prows of her Tawkin junk against the communists, ambushing a flotilla of 9 communist junks in Hangzhou Bay. Later, regular Chinese nationalist forces took over the defense of the island, and two-gun Wang laid her pistols down and took up the orphan children of fellow guerrilla. Aboard the USS Estes, this is Max Jordan near Formosa.
This is New York, Dean Kallenbach, Associated Press. Publisher Albert E. Kahn facing jail on a contempt charge over data about a book written by former communist Harry Mattuso has been given until tonight to produce the material before a federal grand jury. Federal Judge John Clancy agreed today to postpone the start of a 6-month sentence for Kahn if he produced the records wanted by the grand jury. Later this afternoon, Kahn showed newsmen a 171-page document, purportedly a transcript of tape recordings of discussions with Mattuso last November before the actual writing of his book, False Witness, began. The document quotes 28-year-old former FBI and former Mattuso saying he lied before the House Committee on Un-American Activities as well as in court. Mattuso is quoted as saying he used fraudulent propaganda material in the 1952 election campaign to give the impression that Democratic Senator Mike Mansfield of Montana and other Democrats were communist sympathizers. According to documents, Mattuso told his publishers he had accused Far Eastern Affairs specialist Owen Lattermore of being a Red, even though he didn't know who Lattermore was. In New York, this is Dean Kallenbach.
This is Richard Bergholz in New York. Self-described ex-communist and former FBI informer Harvey Mattuso said he was encouraged by Senator Joseph McCarthy to make false statements during the political campaign of 1952. Testifying today at a federal court hearing on the retrial motion by 12 convicted communists, Mattuso said he made false statements and added, quote, "My manner of presentation and my theme was encouraged by Senator Joseph McCarthy, and in fact was at the behest of McCarthy and made during the heat of a political campaign," unquote. When the junior senator from Wisconsin was told today in Milwaukee of Mattuso's testimony, he said, "I would have no comment on Mattuso at all," end quote. The 12 communist appeal of a new trial is based on an affidavit by Mattuso that he gave false evidence against them with the knowledge of Roy M. Cohn, then an assistant U.S. attorney at their conspiracy trial. Also in Milwaukee last night, where he spoke before a Republican women's group, Cohn commented, quote, "I won't dignify his pack of lies. Mattuso has adequately described himself," end quote. Cohn said Mattuso was telling the truth at the time of the communist trials and still thinks he told the truth. In New York, this is Richard Bergholz.
This is West Berlin calling. Stan Turner reporting. Top American officials here are reported convinced on the basis of careful analysis that there will eventually be more trouble among the little group of men who rule Russia. The demotion of Georgi Melnikov, his replacement as premier by Nikolai Bulganin, the emergence of Communist Party boss Nikita Khrushchev as the strongman of Moscow are regarded as the third phase of the struggle for power. The struggle dates from Joseph Stalin's death in March 1953. It reached its first climax with the purging of secret police boss Lavrentiy Beria. Most officials analyzing Soviet government agree on several conclusions about the shakeup, which startled the world on Tuesday. There is more evidence than ever that since Stalin's death, the dozen men who boss the communist system are caught up in personal rivalries, and these struggles will continue until a new dictator clearly appears. While Khrushchev is the strong man now, his power cannot be considered to be firmly established. There is some tendency among U.S. specialists to believe it was the old Bolshevik who got Melnikov. The assumption is they did not like his soft foreign policies. In West Berlin, this is Stan Turner.
This is Chicago. Chuck Quernbach, Associated Press. There appears definite evidence in the Journal of the American Medical Association that smoking can damage the heart muscle. An editorial in the AMA Journal published today says, quote, "Smoking, even though it may not directly affect the coronary arteries, can have a damaging effect on the muscular part of the heart walls," end quote. In New York, the chairman of the Tobacco Industry Research Committee commented that the vast majority of the American public agrees that all questions of tobacco in relation to human health need much more investigation than has been made up to now. Chairman Timothy Hartnett says the committee, organized and financed by large tobacco companies, is continuing research into the tobacco-health relationship. In Chicago, this is Chuck Quernbach.
KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Tim Michaels has this message from Northern States Bank of Ashland.
In honor of Lincoln's birthday, we've got a full measure of devotion from Northern State Bank. How better can we honor the memory of Abraham Lincoln on his birthday than to take increased devotion to that cause for which, in his day and ours, so many brave Americans gave the last full measure of devotion? That government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. Now, Northern States Bank reminds you for your convenience to use their free parking lots. Northern State Bank in Ashland, Mason, Mellon, Glidden, and Butternut, Wisconsin. Member FDIC. Lou, back to you.
A countywide blood bank is slated. Jim Tills of the Superior Evening Telegram has that story.
Formulation of a specific policy is the first huge stride taken by the members of the Superior and Douglas County Community Blood Bank toward their project. The blood bank is established to provide full coverage of all blood needs for member donors and certain members of their families, and to accumulate a ready supply of blood and plasma for the community when the need arises. Blood deposits will be made not more than once in 12 months. Failure to donate blood without valid reason will terminate membership. Membership entitles full coverage of all blood needs for the member, wife or husband, children under 19, parents, and grandparents over 60, Lou.
And finally, good listeners, 108-year-old Civil War vet Albert Woolson of Duluth is celebrating his birthday today. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has the story.
Duluth's frisky Albert Woolson, sole survivor of the Civil War Boys in Blue, celebrated his 108th birthday with greetings from President Eisenhower. Quoting the president in a special delivery letter received at the Woolson home last night, "Such an anniversary is meaningful, not only to your loyal personal friends, but to people throughout America who regard with honor the brave men on either side of the conflict in which you served nearly a century ago. You have my best wishes for a happy and memorable celebration," end quote. Woolson's only public appearance today was the Duluth City Hall dedication of a pedestal holding a bust of the veteran. Tonight, 13 members of Woolson's immediate family will have an informal birthday dinner for him at the home of his daughter, Mrs. John Kobus. Woolson says his chief ambition is to, quote, "get winter over and take a long walk." He also confides that he expects to live another 3 or 4 years. Woolson had some advice for the president on the Formosa situation, quote, "If President Eisenhower asked me, I'd say let's stay home and mind our own business. I'd caution Ike to stay out of those islands," unquote. This is the first year when Woolson hasn't been out shoveling snow from his sidewalk. Quote, "My advancing years are slowing me down." Lou?
And that, Tim, is the 6 o'clock news.
Newsman Lou Martin, who used to babysit Mr. Woolson.
I still have to babysit you.
The Foxhole Gang is baking a birthday cake for old Abe Lincoln, who Lou also used to babysit.
Cute.
Cute as my bag, man. Let's check the word from the weatherman. We've got bone-chilling temps tonight. 20 below, with a high tomorrow of a whopping zero. Let's throw a Lincoln log in the campfire with this hot one from the four lads and standing on the corner on the Tim Michaels Evening Gather Round Show.
Standing on the corner, watching all the girls go by. Standing on the corner, watching all the girls go by. Brother, you don't know a nicer occupation. Matter of fact, neither do I. Then standing on the corner, watching all the girls, watching all the girls, watching all the girls go by. I'm a cat that got the creep. Haven't got a girl, but I can dream. Haven't got a girl, but I can wish. So I take me down to Main Street, and that's where I select my imaginary dish. Standing on the corner, watching all the girls go by. Standing on the corner, giving all the girls the eye. Brother, if you've got a rich imagination, give it a whirl, give it a try. Try standing on the corner, watching all the girls, watching all the girls, watching all the girls go by. Saturday, I'm so broke. Haven't got a girl, and that's no joke. Still I'm living like a millionaire when I take me down to Main Street and I redo the harem parading for me there. Standing on the corner, watching all the girls go by. Standing on the corner, springtime sky. Brother, you can't go to jail for what you think.
You're standing on the corner, watching all the girls, watching all the girls, watching all the girls. Go by.
Four lads standing on the corner on KUWS. Man, baking cake fumes from down the hallway are a gas. I hope that Honest Abe likes lots of chocolate, because I do, kids. Now a message from Superior Water, Light, and Power Company's Ready Kilowatt.
Hi, everybody. This is Ready Kilowatt saying that Superior Water, Light, and Power Company works for the Cornwell Superior Corporation. Ready is proud to furnish such a progressive superior firm with dependable electric service. Since the Cornwell was organized in 1950, it has become one of the nation's major manufacturers of television cabinets. 175 people are employed to make TV cabinets for Admiral Corporation. They're over in Chicago. And Zenith Radio and Television Company. I'm not sure where they are. CBS Columbia. They're in New York. And even the United States government. They're everywhere. And here's something interesting. Superior Water, Light, and Power Company supplies enough energy to Cornwell's plant to light 300 homes. See our window display showing products manufactured from Superior Industries. This is Ready Kilowatt, returning now to the wall socket.
The guy with the light bulb nose and electric body, you only shake hands with him one time. The Foxhole Gang, and hopefully a big cake with lots of frosting, is in next, campers. But first, Tommy Edwards, and It's All in the Game on the Evening Gather Round Show.
Many a dear had to fall, but it's all in the game. All in the wonderful game that we know as love. You have words with him, and your future's looking thin, but these things your hearts can rise above. Once in a while he won't call, but it's all in the game. Soon he'll be there at your side with a sweet and you kiss your lips and caress your wedding fingertips, and your heart will fly away.
Soon you'll be there at your side
with a sweet bouquet, then he'll kiss your lips and caress your wedding fingertips, and your heart
Tommy Edwards, and It's All in the Game on KUWS. Now the Foxhole Gang, starring George G. Newton of George G. Newton Realty. I used to say reality, but it's really realty.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
In reality, it's realty. A common mistake, Tim Boy. Now, my friends here are Floyd Salmi.
I'm finished.
But you just got started.
And Gunnar Gunderson.
An interesting name.
Yeah, we're all retired and have lots of opinions on things.
You know, I wish I could say I was shocked to find out that one of McCarthy's key witnesses lied, but I'm not. I think it's terrible, but I'm not surprised. I mean, this Harvey Matusso wrote a book. It's called False Witness. It's It's about lying about Senator Mansfield and Owen Lattimore being communists. He wrote a book, for crying out loud.
Terrible. Now back to the reason the Foxhole Gang is here.
We have a new member and we're very excited about him.
But I'm afraid he's late.
No. He's not late. He just prefers sitting in the dark.
Yes, I don't like to be called late.
Because dead people are called late?
Yes.
Mr. Gerald Stowe, Douglas County Museum Assistant Curator.
There was an unfortunate demotion from curator to assistant curator when they found him sleeping on the job.
Probably in a pine box.
I mean, it's difficult for me to work during daylight hours. I wish they'd understand. Nobody understands, except Vivian.
Where is Viv, anyway?
She was dismissed from the museum. It seems they have a rule against eating insects. Nobody understands.
So, the Foxhole Gang.
Now, we have many surprises, Lou and Timmy. I'm beside myself. I'd like to spring it on to you all at once, but, hey, it's more fun a piece at a time.
Yes.
First, gentlemen, I propose we tell the true tale of Auntie Belle and Abraham Lincoln.
May I?
Oh, please do.
By all means.
Well, thank you, fellow foxholers. Abraham Lincoln's birthday, it's become quite an important occasion for the Herbert Junot family of Superior throughout the years. More than a century, in fact.
104 years, to be exact.
It was Herbert Junot's beloved Aunt Belle who made headlines in 1851 when she, quite by accident, sang a song for the great emancipator. This story is the stuff of legend. How the little French-Canadian girl, Isabel Landry, sang for Abraham Lincoln at a grocery store in Aurora, Illinois.
It's amazing. It's an amazing story. Just amazing.
Now, in Aunt Belle's own words, here's her story. My meeting with Abraham Lincoln came about in the summer of my 10th year. The exact date I cannot tell, other than it was summertime on a warm morning. It was Charles Hoyt's small store. While Mr. Hoyt was wrapping up my parcels, two men entered the open door, and one of them was Judge Pinney, and the other a tall stranger to those parts. This stranger was Abraham Lincoln. He attracted my attention from the fact that he was so tall and wore such a high hat. If you ask me to describe Lincoln, that's my only remembrance, along with sleeves on his coat that were too short for him. He was pleasant and kind to me. And then Charles Hoyt said to Lincoln, "That little girl can sing, and she can sing in French, too." So Judge Pinney lifted me up and stood me on a chair. I sang my favorite song in French. It was a pretty little song from an opera called, in English, Little Flower of the Wood. Then I sang another French song and got down from the chair. Mr. Lincoln took my hand in his and thanked me again and inquired what kind of candy I liked best. I told him, "Horehound." And turning to Mr. Hoyt, he ordered, "Do up a pound of horehound candy for this little songstress."
Amazing story to meet the great man like that.
Yes, but that's not all. Tell it all, Georgie.
But later, in 1854, when hardy pioneers convened in old Aurora and sounded the first battle cries of free soil and anti-slavery, Isabel Landry was sometimes a singer at those historic occasions. Miss Landry lived out her life in Aurora. She passed in 1928 at the age of 86.
How's them tomatoes? And that's just the first surprise.
I'm all tingly with excitement for the rest, guys. That story deserves a Johnny Mathis song, and fittingly, Wonderful, Wonderful on the Evening Abe Lincoln Gather Round Show.
Sometimes we walk hand in hand by the sea, and we breathe in the cool, salty air. You turn to me with a kiss in your eyes, and my heart feels a thrill beyond compare.
Melt in my arms, where we are, darling, only.
wondrous things, it's true. But they wouldn't have much meaning without you. Some quiet evening I sit by your side, and we're lost in a world of our own. I feel the glow of your unspoken love. I'm aware of the treasure that I own. And I say to myself, it's wonderful, wonderful, oh, so wonderful, my love. And I say to myself, it's wonderful, wonderful, oh,
Johnny Matheson, wonderful, wonderful on KUWS. So, cappers, let's hope the next surprise is Lincoln birthday cake. Not sure what that would be, but it should have lots of frosting on the top hat.
Too much frosting makes my teeth tingle.
And they're not even your teeth.
Our next surprise can best be told by Jerry.
Yes, I don't like nicknames.
Jerry has friends and connections everywhere.
It's mind-boggling.
As if he was 400 years old or something.
Yes, no.
Go ahead, my pale friend. Do the honors.
Yes. Abraham Lincoln was in Wisconsin on at least two occasions, perhaps more. His most memorable call occurred in the autumn of 1859... when he visited Milwaukee, Beloit, and Janesville. While in Janesville, Lincoln occupied a room in the second floor of the 30-room mansion which belonged to his host, William Morrison Tallman.
A guy by the name of Tallman hosted the tallest American president?
He was 6'4" tall.
That's the gospel truth.
Yes, I'm uncomfortable talking about religion. One can easily picture Lincoln's tall, gangling figure in that room today, for it remains much as it was 96 years ago. The ornate gas lamp hanging from the ceiling lighted his room upon retirement. He was provided with running water and a marble lavatory. There was a bell pull for summoning servants from the basement by a door. That door opened on a large closet containing a built-in chest of drawers, providing ample space for the great man's garments. This information is from my colleague, Mr. Wayne E. Fuller, who is director of the Rock County Historical Society.
That's the wonderful part. They preserved this mansion. It's just like it was in 1859, the year before Mr. Lincoln became President Lincoln.
Yes, in May, the Lincoln Tallman home will be open to the public. Visitors may view the Lincoln room and climb from the basement to the mansion's domed cupola in this gracious old mansion that once served as a station on the Underground Railroad.
And your favorite part would be the basement?
Basements are never fully appreciated either.
Play another musical number, Timmy. And then it's the final surprises.
Surprises? Plural.
Maybe it's cake and cookies. Joe Stopper is our last number. It's got nothing to do with Lincoln's birthday, but I can't really think of a song that does. This is You Belong to Me on the Evening Gather Round Show.
Remember when a dream appears.
wet with rain. Just remember till you're home again.
Stafford, and you belong to me on KUWS. Already bring on the Lincoln Chow.
These are distinguished gentlemen who are dedicated to civil political discourse, not a chow train.
And it just so happens that Abraham Lincoln, in our humble opinions, is the champion of civil political debate.
What on earth?
You were saying, distinguished Lou?
We all put on our thinking caps, and we came up with this.
Stovepipe hats for everyone. Here you go, Tim and Lou.
Ooh, cool.
I don't know. Stovepipe hats make my face look fat.
Yes, it goes nicely with my black cape.
Very smart look, Jerry.
And Timmy, your favorite part, Lincoln Chow.
Featuring caramel and nut roll, Lincoln logs.
4-score and 7-layer cake.
And Honest Abe punch. As in, honest, it isn't spiked.
I could use some spiked punch about now.
Oh, the best part is yet to come.
Georgie is going to read the Gettysburg Address.
Yes, it wasn't the main address, but it was what everyone remembers of the dedication of the Soldiers' National Cemetery at Gettysburg.
You probably enjoy cemetery dedications.
Yes.
Oh, Jerry's right. Prominent orator Edward Everett gave the keynote. He spoke for more than 2 hours.
While Lincoln spoke for less than 3 minutes. The Gettysburg Address was just 272 words.
It was a chilly day. Perfect. Except it was sunny.
November 19th, 1863, more than 4 months after the Battle of Gettysburg.
You know, Lincoln believed that the Civil War had a deep meaning. Like the Revolutionary War, 4-score and 7 years before, the Civil War marked a new start for the United States of America.
So, what is this final surprise?
Oh, George has been practicing and practicing. Go ahead, George.
Thank you, Gunner. November 19th, 1863, the words of the great emancipator. 4-score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation, so conceived, so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who gave here their lives that this nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, you know, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it, far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note, nor long remember what we say here, but it cannot forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus so nobly advanced. It's rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last
full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
And thee, like the crowd at the Soldiers' National Cemetery in Gettysburg, do not applaud or cheer, but rather disperse respectfully. Georgie, that was very respectfully done.
Well, time to put out the campfire, but we'll be back same time, same place, the good Lord willing, and we don't get arrested for wearing these stovepipe hats while driving. For Lou Martin and the Foxhole Gang, I'm Tim Michaels. Hey, Gunny, I thought you said that there were two more surprises.
You betcha. It's time to play Lincoln Stumpers.
We have a log theme going.
Everyone knows Lincoln was the first Republican president, but what was his first political point?
Ooh, I know. Pick me.
Go ahead, Gunner.
He was a Whig until the party was split over slavery.
No way was he a Whig. No Republican would ever wear a Whig.
Colonel Joseph Buster Raffley.
Heard about the free food, eh, Colonel?
I heard we were celebrating my second favorite president's birthday. Harding. Now, Harding, he's my favorite. So it seemed natural enough to me that the Colonel should be here to remind you people that Lincoln was a Republican. So, no nut Lincoln logs for the Democrats.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1955, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Duke Skorich, Tom Martinson, Don Hansen, Al Katz, John Munson, Joe Cadott, Jim Packard, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1955 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.